or put their opinion into the world today, you better make sure that what you're saying is measured twice before you just put it out there. Because if it's not, it is no longer time to be tone deaf. It is no longer time to engage your mouth before thinking. And today, Drew Brees and Vic Fangio, two NFL entities, stepped in it today. Welcome. It is good to be with you once again, Ray and Matt. We got people who just, the amount of not getting it is the poster child for the privilege that some people get to enjoy in this world. It's really, really something else. And I don't want to go any further into the show without reminding everybody that Drew Brees went to Purdue. I've been warning you all for a long time.
Well, as we all know, nobody from the University of Indiana would think this way, right?
It's Indiana University, never the U before the I. But thank you, Ray, and no, not anymore. Thank you very much.
Not anymore? Okay. I think you speak for you. It's the sound of two guys who don't get it and only had to be told to get it to the extent that they do by people they rely on every day for the money they make and the careers they have. And I'm not going to speak to whether in their heart they are truly racist, but they clearly don't get the dynamic, not as it exists now, but as it has existed for their entire lives. I mean, this is not a new sudden realization for people who've been paying attention. This has been true for decades, centuries even. And it's the idea that it's not racism until I feel it is what we're talking about here today. They don't see it, so they don't think it exists. And if they do think it exists, it's somebody else's problem. And it's the same thing the way Brees looks at police brutality. He doesn't look at the brutality part. He looks at the police. And for him, the police are swell. Well, a lot of police are swell. But that's not the point right now. The point right now is there are a bunch of police who aren't swell, in part because they want not to be swell, and in part because the people who they take orders from don't want them to be. That's where we're at now. That's the sound that everybody should be hearing, and it's the sound they didn't get until they got screamed at.
Yeah, I think Michael Thomas, his own star receiver, speaking of people he depends on every day, had a series of responses to this that are interesting, given that he practices with that guy every day. It starts by saying he don't know no better. And then he says, we don't care if you don't agree, and whoever else, how about that? And then he retweeted a Mike Freeman response to Brees, which is, how can anyone watch George Floyd get murdered? And their first response when asked about it is respect the flag. And I think, again, I wouldn't. There's not really any reason for me to think that Drew Brees in his heart has hate for people of color, has hate for black people. That doesn't. I wouldn't accuse him of that. But what he clearly has is a level of unexamined privilege that, in the times we are in now, rises to the level of racism. And this is what we were talking about yesterday when we said it's not enough anymore to not be actively racist. You have to be anti-racist, and you have to understand what that means. And it's very clear that neither Vic Fangio nor Drew Brees, but, you know, Fangio is a 61-year-old guy who didn't get a job as a head coach for a long time because I think people knew he might say some weird things if you put a microphone in front of him. Drew Brees is the leader of a team largely composed of black men. And for him to have not spent a minute thinking about this clearly is incredibly disappointing to me.
Racist conversation came in three different lanes, right? Are, ain't, and rather not. People who admit, yeah, I am. People who will try to convince you, no, I ain't. And people who would just rather not have the conversation. The rather not option has vanished. In the last week, the I would rather not talk about this. I don't want to confront it. I'm more comfortable burying my head in the sand and talking about the experience that I feel and the perspective that I enjoy. And that's the way I approach my day. That's no longer a safe space. That's no longer a place where you can hang out. That's no longer where you can come from. We're not there anymore. It's time to put your name on who you really are. What do you think? And for a guy like Drew Brees, a Hall of Fame quarterback who can't see the field. I mean, that's what this is right now. It's like does Drew Brees have a television? You know, I mean, does Drew Brees have the internet? Because if you have both those things and you think that this is still about Colin Kaepernick's knee touching that electric third rail of patriotism and not the ground over Black Lives Mattering, that's who you are, and that says an awful lot about who you are. I mean, I don't mean to be quoting Rush here today, but if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. Straight up. Straight up. The world is no longer a comfortable place for fence sitters. We are now officially keeping receipts and separating good guys from bad guys. And I'm not saying that Drew Brees is a bad guy. This guy turned around and gave an awful lot to New Orleans to help rebuild after Katrina. He is not anything that is all of one thing, none of the other. No one is their best day. No one is their worst day. No one is their best statement. No one is their worst statement. But to not get it on day 7 of the entire globe burning over this issue is a level of ignorance that can no longer be afforded by any team or really in any conversation.
This is relevant to that exact point. If you're looking what good responses look like, and you want to see examples of that, I think we'll talk about Patrice Bergeron at some point today for sure, but I just saw a video from Melissa Colorado, NBC Bay Area, and Telemundo reporter of Stephen and Aisha Curry walking right now in a peaceful demonstration at Lake Merritt, hands up, masks on, as we speak.
Yeah, Clay Thompson, Juan Toscano-Anderson, I believe David Lee is on premises, so Damian Lee. Damian Lee, all your Lees. The Warriors are out there. It's nice that they're being seen. It'd be even better, if you ask me, if they were heard on their own flagship station. I'd like to see that encouraged from the top down.
Yeah, I mean, they get to choose the avenues by which they speak, but the silence is the problem. And it's almost worse than the people who say, I'm for the police no matter what they do, because it means that those are all people who can't be bothered at a time when everybody has to be bothered. You know, there's a virus that nobody can get their hands around. And there's another one that we've had for hundreds of years that we haven't been able to get our hands around. So however they choose to speak is completely fine. The fact that there are more people out there, and I'm not talking just about athletes, but people in general, you know, people who may not have a voice but can show it in other ways. Quiet is not an option. It's, you know, we have always liked the strong silent type. No, silence is now weakness. And everybody has to face that. That's the new reality.
Even those who don't like getting ahead of public statement and sentiments are starting to see that is no longer a comfortable place to be, and it's you can't live there anymore. I'd rather not talk about it. Doesn't exist. It really doesn't these days. And we've got some very interesting topics coming from the NHL. Obviously, the NBA is getting close to restarting. Major League Baseball seems intent on sabotaging itself and its place in the sports world, arguing over money. It's something else. We got a great show for you today. Van Lathan, who was supposed to join us yesterday, is coming by at 2:30. He is a podcaster for The Ringer. Vincent Goodell from Yahoo Sports is going to be joining us. Nick Ferguson.
No relation.
Yeah, no relation to Roger.
I believe Nick, it's Goodwill, isn't it? Is it not?
Did I say Goodell? Pardon me. Goodwill Hunting. Vincent Goodwill. Nick Ferguson is going to be joining us today. He is a defensive back for the Denver Broncos, was a defensive back for the Denver Broncos, 10-year NFL career, coach for the 49ers for a little bit, now a radio host in Denver. He joined us for a great conversation about a month ago, and since Vic Fangio is in the news for all the wrong reasons, he's going to join us. And I almost hesitate to put it out there, but I did tweet about it. We got our fingers crossed. Too Short is supposed to join us at 5 o'clock today, and we hope that that happens. We hope that you plan on being with us. It is a What If Wednesday. Damon Ratto and Kolsky officially underway here, and we're brought to you by Chilton Auto Body, open to serve the Bay Area with contact-free auto body repair options, along with free pickup and delivery. Chilton Auto Body now offers virtual estimates and curbside contact-free service from the comfort of your vehicle. Book an appointment today at ChiltonAutoBody.com. We are just underway. Let's do this. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
It is really good to have you here today. Thanks so much for stopping on by. Drew Brees has the entire NFL world going, come on, are you serious, man? Why? Well, because he said this earlier today to Yahoo.com. Drew Brees asked about how he would feel if when the NFL season got underway, players were back to taking a knee during the national anthem, and here is what Drew Brees said.
Well, I will never agree with anybody disrespecting the flag of the United States of America or our country. Let me just tell you what I see or what I feel when the national anthem is played and when I look at the flag of the United States. I envision my two grandfathers who fought for this country during World War II. One in the Army and one in the Marine Corps, both risking their lives to protect our country and to try to make our country and this world a better place. So every time I stand with my hand over my heart, looking at that flag and singing the national anthem, that's what I think about. And in many cases, it brings me to tears, thinking about all that has been sacrificed, not just those in the military, but for that matter, those throughout the civil rights movements of the 60s and everyone and all that has been endured by so many people up until this point. And is everything right with our country right now? No, it's not. We still have a long way to go. But I think what you do by standing there and showing respect to the flag with your hand over your heart is it shows unity. It shows that we are all in this together. We can all do better and that we are all part of the solution.
What he doesn't get is you don't get to pick what the flag represents to you, and that is the default setting for everyone else. And it's Richard Sherman has responded to this on Twitter saying, you know, I guarantee you there were black men fighting alongside your grandfather, but this doesn't seem to be about that. That uncomfortable conversation you are trying to avoid by injecting military into a conversation about brutality and equality is part of the problem.
There's two things that happen here in my estimation, and I guess the sort of secondary one is the type of topic changing gobbledygook we were talking about yesterday. That the question is about, given the police brutality and the murders of black men by police in this country, how do you feel about a protest of police brutality that was taking place in your league? And how might you feel if it came back with a vengeance in the coming year? And for the response to be about his grandfather's in the military and what the flag means to him is not an answer to the question whatsoever. So that's the first thing. But much more importantly is the first thing he says. I'm never going to be in favor of disrespecting the flag. And this is where... this is honestly, and I'm not saying Drew Brees is the author of this, but he's the product of this. That is what the bad guys want you to think is going on here. And that was the misdirect that people pulled on Colin Kaepernick, who went out of his way to attempt to do his protest in the most respectful way to the flag he could. He asked a veteran, what's the best way for me to respect the flag? And that's what he did. And yet people, including Drew Brees, are still talking about disrespecting the flag. I can't think of anything more respectful to the flag than to kneel in front of it, to ask for equal rights. It's the most American thing you can ask for is equal rights. And to do it while kneeling in front of our flag, to me, is as American an act as you could take.
Yeah, that's essentially it's either an inability to understand what's been said on the subject for 4 years, or to refuse to understand it. And life is fine if you don't do that and nothing happens. And if nobody's getting, you know, getting killed in the street for being black. But once that happens, you don't get that luxury anymore. You don't get to misunderstand on purpose. You don't get to misunderstand by accident. People all over the country are telling you, this is what this means. Here's the visual proof of what we're talking about and what's been happening for 100 years and more. This is what Colin Kaepernick was talking about. And so I think, you know, it might be that he's not paying attention to a staggering level. I mean, just an almost unthinkable level of putting your hands over your ears, closing your eyes, and humming really loud so no noise comes in. Or you don't want to understand it. You want instead for this to be about what you want it to be. He doesn't get to pick the message, all right? He gets to react to the message. He gets to think about the message. And if he still disagrees, then he disagrees. But the last thing you do if you're in his position is say anything. And even then, if you don't say anything, you're marked by your silence. I mean, at some point, you are called upon to speak whether you want to or not. That's it. That's the new reality. That's the new normal. You've been waiting for it. Here it is. That's the new normal. On some things, you don't get to sit it out.
You know, and people are saying, you know, you're not going to change anyone's mind with words. You might be right about that. That's why people have taken to the streets to have protests, because words are not enough. And, you know, if you say out loud readily, you're not going to change people's minds, don't you complain another bit about a single protest that you see, because you just made the explanation. You just told us why there's a protest, because there aren't enough words in the language to convince you that you're wrong. Well, here's the deal. You're wrong. If you're comfortable being racist, you're wrong. You will be exposed and you will have a harder time living than ever before. To me, that's a good thing. It's time to point out who are the slow pedestrians in society retarding our progress. That's what you're doing. If you're comfortable retarding our progress on the when it comes to racial situations, I want to know who you are. Please raise your hand so I can pick you out and realize that you are a less than human being. And that's really what this is. What side of the greater than, less than statement do you want to be on? Period. And end of story. If you want to be on the I don't care about this, what you're saying is that you think black people are on the less than side of that equation, and you are on the greater than side of that equation. You're comfortable with it. Period. Period. And if you're comfortable with that, it says quite a bit about you. It really does. You know, Vic Fangio. You know, I used to say that, you know, older guys, I don't begrudge them their racism. They grew up in a different time. It's a different generation. You know, just the fact that they're, you know, if you're over the age of 65 and you're walking around not casually using the N-word, like I used to count that as, well, that's a win, right? That's a win. You can't count that as a win anymore. I don't. That was a mistake that I made. I realize that now. Vic Fangio today said, there is no racism in the NFL. It's a meritocracy. Everything you get is earned. There is no racism. Can't find it. Doesn't even understand what the question is about. He is, of course, now walking back that statement as fast as humanly possible. And I hope it's after Von Miller, you know, showed up at his front door, double lapelled him, put him up against the wall and said, really? Really? No racism in the NFL? Tell me more about that, Vic. By the way, what color was the coach that you replaced?
I think, you know, and I'm not trying to find, you know, a way to explain Drew Brees. That's going to be his job. I don't think they know what racism is because they haven't been hit in the face with it. And when I say hit in the face, I mean been the victim of it. Because that's what we think racism is. It's something overt. And black people have been telling us for forever. Brown people have been telling us forever. Asians have been telling us forever. Racism is every day 100 little things that they've had to swallow. And now it's become not only weaponized, but dangerous to your health in ways that that everybody can see. The racists aren't even trying to hide it anymore.
Well, but think about what
and
you
so
just
you
said.
Don't, right? Even with that, the fact that they're showing it to you and waving it in your face and making sure you see it while they kneel on your head, you don't get to not see it. It's there. It's like jumping off a building and then saying, I never knew about gravity.
Go ahead.
Yeah, man. I mean, I think that's to your point, Ray. It seems like these are the comments of two guys who simply don't understand what racism actually is. And a lot of people do. A lot of people who have not experienced racism have come to understand it because, as Ray just said, people of color have been telling us about it forever, much longer than any of us have been alive. People of color have been telling us about the racism they experience. And granted, nobody was listening 100 years ago, and not nearly enough people are listening now, clearly, because there's no way that Drew Brees, living the life he's lived, has avoided earshot of any of those conversations or points made by people who have suffered racism in this country. He has heard it. He simply hasn't listened to it.
Right. I mean, I guess he was watching that great old movie, Vermont's Burning. Oh, no, wait, it wasn't about white people in the Northeast. It was Mississippi's burning, which is really close to Louisiana. And you seem to grasp all this at a moment when Katrina was saying, man, we could use someone to help us out. Why not now? It's incredibly disappointing. Van Lathan is good enough to join us here. He is a podcaster for The Ringer. He was supposed to join us yesterday. Today, he's able to join us, and we do appreciate that. Van Lathan, welcome to Damon Ratto and Kolsky. It is good to be to have you here with us today. We're talking about Drew Brees and the comments made by Vic Fangio today, and at least one guy's walking it back. I don't know about the other. How are you, man? Good to have you on today. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing as well as can be considered, given the state of American society. But we trudge along and we do our best to kind of make sure that we're extrapolating the positive out of everything that's happening.
What do you think about just the fact that we got, two men of, distinction in the NFL, if you will, not even bothering to think about this clearly in the last 7 days? I mean, you had to know that you were going to be asked about it in your first interview, and to have clearly paid so little attention and to have considered the evidence put in front of you nightly on cable television as to something might be wrong here. It's really, it's an unbelievable level of tone deaf that I guess I might have been naive to not expect it.
Yeah, I think, the cases individually strike different chords in me. In the case of Fangio, to say that he doesn't really feel or see racism in the NFL, his industry, I know several NFL players. Scores of NFL players. And when you talk to them, especially in the way that we talk, you always come across stories that have to do with unfairness, with sort of institutional systemic racism that doesn't sound a lot different than what black Americans face in society at large. Now, obviously, the majority of these gentlemen, or at least a fair percentage of them, are incredibly well compensated. So it's not completely the same as what somebody else that's also dealing with poverty or economic oppression has to deal with. But you hear these stories all the time. You hear them so much that they start to talk about problems that they really have in the league. These are guys like Arian Foster, guys like Marcellus Wiley, guys that I talk to a lot. They tell you about these things. And so to hear someone speak at cross purposes to that, or it makes you wonder if they're listening to the guys in the same way that I am. Or it makes you wonder what the communication glitch is between him and so many of the players in the league. And that in and of itself represents a large portion of the problem in America. Because oftentimes we're talking, and either we're not talking directly to one another, or we're not speaking in the same cultural language. And also, there's a part of me that believes that a lot of people turn a blind eye to what's right under their face. And we can't continue to do that and live in a healthy society. It just doesn't work that way. Racism is a disease no different than cancer, no different than any other one. And you don't treat the disease by not treating it. You have to talk about it. You have to have, sometimes you have to have difficult treatments for it. You have to do all kinds of things that you might not want to do. As far as Drew, it's personally hurtful because I'm from South Louisiana, and I was there in New Orleans when we won the Super Bowl. And I watched that city rally around that team and that leader and really be healed from everything that we had been through a couple of years before. And to see that with all of that, Drew Brees, who understood what he meant to South Louisiana, that he can't understand what his words might do to Black Americans everywhere, or how his sort of ignorance on the topic can affect people, it's troubling. And I don't know what else to do to make somebody like that get it. If after all of this, you can't get it, it makes you want to wash your hands.
This is an abstract question, so forgive me if it's not really answerable by anybody, but how much of the circumstances that we're in today, when you add the virus that has sort of decimated, you know, so many lives across the board, and now this has basically caused white folks who normally wouldn't be in a position to listen or a mood to listen to suddenly listen now? Because while we talk about Drew Brees and Vic Fangio, I also see that more people are paying attention to it than ever before. And it's not just, I mean, there have been deaths of innocent Black men ever since George Floyd, but it seems like finally, you know, we as a society have been pushed into a corner where we have either have to both listen and then speak, or never speak again. Am I reading that right?
Two things. No, not necessarily wrong at all. Two things have happened. Well, number one, I would just like to point that there have been the deaths of innocent Black people in America since before America was a country. The death of innocent Black people has been, you know what I mean, from the Middle Passage to slavery to Jim Crow to all of those. The death of innocent Black people isn't anything new for America. There are two things that have happened in a very short amount of time, if you ask me. The first thing is definitely what you touched on, which is America was in a holding pattern. So remember, there wasn't anything to change the story. So something happens to Trayvon Martin, and then that Trayvon Martin is the story, right? Then NBA players wear hoodies on the game that happens a couple of days later. Then them wearing hoodies becomes the story. Then someone saying something about that becomes, and then the story continues to evolve away from what the first story was. Well, we don't have anything to evolve the story. Not really. The only thing that there was the moment that we were in, and we had to stew in that moment. There were no ball games. There was no bars to go to. No new music dropping. No new movies coming out. The Avengers weren't going to come save anybody. None of that. Everyone's in a holding pattern. So we're stewing on it. And when we stew on it, people go, this is wrong, we're in this moment, and what do we do to affect this moment? That's one thing that happened. The second thing that happened was, and this happened remarkably fast, in the moment between the last time there was major civil unrest over a police killing and this time, a new generation of people found its voice. When you go out to these, I'm 40, when you go out to these protests, which I've been to a couple of them, and you see people in their 20s, and some even younger, well, they were too young X amount of years ago to really be involved. They were still in middle school. They were still in whatever. The protests now are insanely diverse, incredibly diverse. You have a new generation of kids who is rejecting this definition of their world. They don't want to be participatory in this type of stuff. They're really, in a real way, I need people to understand this. They're actually saying no. And they're mad about it, as mad as African Americans are. And they're taken to the street. And it represents to me a sea change and a real one.
It's maybe the one encouraging thing about all of this. Van Lathan is our guest. The podcast on The Ringer is Higher Learning. And listening to the first couple episodes, the one thing you said that super stood out to me was you made what I thought was an excellent analogy about cancer and how this entire process, you know, can sort of be viewed as the treatment of cancer. Can you explain that to us?
Yeah. So, like I said in the podcast, like I told you guys earlier, I'm from South Louisiana. And another thing about sort of economic oppression is that, you know, where I'm from, there are a ton of plants and people of all different ethnicities. We get sick. It's called right below me, just south of me, it's called Cancer Alley. So I've seen a disproportionate amount of people in my life that have cancer. And when they get cancer, I mean, I'm talking about kids sometimes younger, 14, 15. First guy I know, a first friend of mine died of throat cancer. I think he was 15 years old. We were sophomores. But when you see this, you don't just see the cancer, you see the treatment. And it's a weird thing. It messes with your mind because you didn't know that the person was sick when you were looking at them before. It's just one day somebody tells you they have cancer, and then all of a sudden they lose all their hair, and you start to say, well, they lose their hair because of cancer. And you go, no, I lost my hair because of chemotherapy. I lost my hair because this is what you have to do to kill the cancer. And oftentimes you go, well, man, it looks like to me the treatment is more uncomfortable and destructive than the disease is itself. It looks that way, but it's not true. The treatment is uncomfortable. The treatment is hard to look at. The treatment is hard to go through. The treatment is hard for everybody around. It makes you weak. It makes you tired. It stresses everyone around you. Test the limits of the suffering that they can watch from you go through. But the treatment is, in many cases, the only way to kill the disease. So you have to go through it. So all of the unrest, all of the tumult, all of the bad feelings, the uncertainty that the American people are feeling right now, and everybody is feeling it. Everyone is feeling it. This is the chemotherapy to an incredibly dangerous disease. And as uncomfortable as we are now, as hard as we are to look at now, what we have to hope is that the therapy takes and that our hair grows back and that we're strong and in 5 years, 10 years, we can come back and celebrate that we are making steps towards being cancer-free. And when you see someone that is actually beating the disease, because I know a lot of people who have, the way that they appreciate life and appreciate everything that they've gone through and appreciate the struggle that they've had just to breathe is something that I want my country and my community to feel. I want us to feel how great it would be one day to have a situation and a culture where these things weren't kicking us in our throat all the time.
Van Lathan of The Ringer. I didn't mean to cut you off, Van, but we appreciate you joining us today very much. Thank you. We're trying to keep a conversation going. Not just this week, but we want to keep it going, and hopefully we can talk to you another time. Really do appreciate your time today. I got to ask, Van Lathan, is that your real name? Because if that's your real name, that is an awesome name.
That is the one question that I get all the time. Yes, man, not only is his real, but that's my daddy's name. I'm Van Lathan Jr., so thank him.
A hell of a name, man. I love a good name like I love a good haircut. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Stay safe, dog. Appreciate the time.
Van Lathan of The Ringer here on 95.7 The Game. Good conversation with him. Hope you did appreciate it. We're brought to you by our good friends at Fremont Bank, still open to serve the community that they love with full-service banking and no compromises.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
It is really good to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us today. Very interesting times we're all living in. It's a time to get better. It's a time to be more honest, be more open. It's a time to confront injustice in a way that, you know, just 2 weeks ago didn't feel like it was the right time. It's the time. It's happening right now. And you can either be a part of the revolution or you can be run over by it. But it's not going to stop just because you're fed up and you don't want to hear about it and you're tired of it and you're bored of it. This one's not going away. And rightfully so. You know, COVID-19 is a virus. Racism is a cancer. And the cancer needs treatment right now. It's killing America. It is killing America. And I do hope that we're on our way to getting better by the protest, by the hour, by the day. Patrice Bergeron, Ray, welcome back, everyone, to Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Patrice Bergeron is a very important Boston Bruin. And his name and his reputation go far and wide in the world of hockey. The man does not say very much. As a matter of fact, he has always abstained from social media. But today, Ray, he went on social media using the Bruins' Instagram account and their Twitter account to say something that, you know, because a man has said so little, you might think he might not have much to say. Apparently, Patrice Bergeron had plenty to say today. Since hockey is your corner of the sports world, would you please kind of frame this for everyone?
Hey, Patrice Bergeron is arguably the best player on a very good Boston Bruin team. And one of the things that he is known for among above and beyond his play is the fact that he doesn't say a lot. He doesn't offer a lot of opinions about what he thinks about this or that or anything. He's always been one of those guys who comes to work, works his ass off, goes home. Today he put out a statement that basically is the statement that everybody who prefers to be silent ought to commit to memory and maybe use once they feel comfortable, because to now is when you got to feel comfortable about it. Here's what he said. As many of you know, I don't have social media. Right or wrong, I've always tried to stay away from making my opinions public. As hockey players, we have a tendency to do our business while staying quiet, without wanting to make too much noise. It is in our culture. But surrounding the murder of George Floyd and the protests that followed, it made me realize that by not speaking up on the matter and not using my voice as a professional athlete, it is in fact allowing racism to fester and continue. Silence is not an option for me anymore. I realize that I will never truly understand the fear, pain, and suffering the black community has endured. As a white man, I've always tried to live by respect and equality, but I must also acknowledge my privileges. I'm disappointed in myself that it took this long for me to truly open my eyes. Seeing all this pain truly breaks my heart and forces me to seek answers. Today and going forward, I want to listen, educate myself, and stand up for the black community. We cannot change the past, but we certainly can't change the future, and it's time to truly acknowledge this cry for help. And it needs to be more than a simple Instagram post. Let's take real actions. With an open heart and compassion, I'm determined to be an ally, continue to grow myself, and raise my children to be anti-racist. You know, that is, I mean, for people who don't want to speak because they don't feel like they have enough to offer, or because that's how they were raised, or that's the culture they've grown up in, this is the response to that. You can find the statement on the Bruins website. You can find it on Twitter. It's all over the place. But it really is. It is the cry of the silent who can no longer be silent. And there are other people who have followed it since. But that's the first one that I've seen. And I think that's the one that might inspire a lot of other people to say, oh, this is how I can talk now. This is how I can stop sitting and watching stuff happen to other people. This is the lesson right here.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, it's an incredibly well-written statement that goes in a little deeper than you even have to. You know, I've seen a lot of responses from various places. Oh, how, you know, you can't expect people to talk. You can't demand that people talk. And, you know, if people want to keep their opinions to themselves, that's up to them. And I understand that viewpoint to a degree. But this isn't about having to share your whole heart with someone, having to expose your soul to the world. This is about being able to stand up on whatever platform you have and say a few simple things. Black Lives Matter is the most important thing you can say. And after that, you can say very clearly, the institution of law enforcement is in desperate need of change. Like, literally, if you're someone who doesn't like to talk, you could make a Twitter account, tweet those two sentences, Black Lives Matter, we have a law enforcement institution that needs to change and needs to have systemic racism rooted out of it. Boom, you're done. You don't have to tell us the ages of your children and, you know, whether or not they're going to be going to state schools or private schools for college. You don't have to do much. This is pretty easy. And if you're not capable of taking a stand on the side of decency and respect for humanity, we don't have time for you anymore. And that's the message that needs to be sent.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a believer in cancel culture. I'm not. But I do believe that if you in 2020 are going to die on this hill, you die. This is no more triage for people dying on this hill. You know, somebody on the text line said, "You guys are racist. You clearly hate white people." Here's the deal. In terms of racism, I'm on team black. Period. Period and end of story. From now on, it was that way to begin with. I never was comfortable with it. I never endorsed it. I never looked at this and thought, yeah, this is all right. But, you know, I didn't talk about it. I'm here to tell you, it's wrong. If you, as a man, can't stand up against oppression, you're no man at all, and your father raised a coward. Period. So, no cowards here. I think we're all very comfortable standing up and telling you what's in our heart. And this isn't a temporary week long, and we're over it by next week. We don't talk about it anymore. No, not on this show. It's not going to happen. I'm not going backwards. I'm not pedaling backwards anymore. I'm not allowing anyone to pedal backwards anymore. And, you know, what can you do? Three guys on the radio to affect change. We can change the conversation. We can demand the conversation happen. You know, there's so much talk. Oh, fake news, this news, fake news, this news, that news. You want to know where the real power in news is? It's not choosing what you're going to talk about. It's choosing what you're not talking about. That's where an awful lot of power in editorial news lies. And you say, well, you guys are a sports talk radio station. You're not news. Look, this is radio. Things happen that change the definition of what we are. And if you're not ready to evolve with the times, chances are you're not on the air very long. I'm very comfortable with the position that this show is taking. I'd be wildly uncomfortable if the show were taking any other position.
Right. You know, someone on the text line. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, please go ahead.
Someone on the text line asked what I think is a perfectly valid question. Can we take the side of Black Lives Matter and also still believe in standing for the anthem? And I think there's an answer to this, and it's kind of important. And of course, the answer is yes. Of course you can believe that Black Lives Matter and still believe in standing for the anthem. Where you cease to be American is demanding others stand for the anthem. That's not part of the deal. You get to decide how you feel about the anthem and the flag and all of that sort of stuff. And if you believe that standing is the right thing to do, you get to stand. And in fact, you even get to tell other people that you believe standing is the right thing to do, and you get to explain why. But if you want to be conscientious, then if someone else is doing something different, you don't tell them, I won't listen to what you're saying because you're wrong, and I refuse to listen to you because you're not standing for the anthem. You ask them why. And when they tell you why, you listen, and you try to understand what could make them feel differently about the anthem and the flag than you do. That's the difference. It's not about everyone should kneel for the anthem. That would be ridiculous. Right, it's about Colin Kaepernick chose a moment to make a peaceful protest. And the fact that you noticed that protest suggests to a certain extent it worked. The next part is you listening to what he's actually saying.
Forcing someone to stand for an anthem is like forcing someone to celebrate a religious holiday that they're not they're not involved in that religion.
Right.
The simple answer to codify in my head is stand for the anthem of the country you want America to be. Not the America that we're watching blow up in front of us. Not the one where you're afraid of the people who are tasked with keeping you safe, or the political system that is supposed to believe in all men being equal, men being code for men and women. Stand for the America you want America to be. That's the answer. And when somebody asks you, why are you standing for the anthem? He says, because I believe in America that's not here yet. And that's what I'm working for. That way, you're that's the message. If you have any ambiguities about standing up, that's the answer. The answer is, I'm standing for the America I'd like us to be.
888-957-9570 as we move into our 3 o'clock hour.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
We had a couple callers stuck behind a guest. Let's get out to the call lines right now. Sandy, who says she's in the military. No, unfortunately, we dropped Sandy. Sandy, give us a call back if you can. Mailman Steve in Napa. Mailman Steve, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys. I want to point out to you guys that I called the other day talking about police reform. I think that's where we need to focus our efforts now. And I don't know anything about police reform, so I kind of looked up police unions. And there's a terrible history of police union presidents being very nefarious characters. And in a lot of cities, the police union president has more power than the police chief, and in some cases more than the mayor. So I think that's where the new battleground is. It's not out in the streets tearing stuff up anymore. It's hitting these police unions over the head in the courtrooms. And I think that's the first step that's got to happen to have any real change in the way policing is done in this country. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thank you, Mailman Steve.
Quickly, relevant to that, if you are interested in what that caller just said, he's absolutely right. The police unions are responsible for a lot of the circumstances.